Hello, this is Mrs. English again. I will be reading today from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. I will be reading from Book 15. In Book 15, Zeus will wake up on Mount Ida after his little interlude with his wife Hera. The Greeks will be driven back to their defenses, all the way back to the ships, and we'll end Book 15 with the battle at the ships. But after they had crossed back over the ditch, and we're talking about the Trojans, and the sharp stakes in flight, and many had gone down under the hands of the Danaans, and remember the Danaans are the Greeks, the Dardanians are the Trojans. Danaans are the Greeks, Dardanians are the Trojans. They checked about once more, and stood their ground by the chariots, green for fear and terrified. But now Zeus wakened by Hera of the gold throne on the high places of Ida, and stood suddenly upright, and saw the Achaeans and the Trojans, these driven to flight, the others harrying them in confusion, these last Argives, Greeks, and saw among them the Lord Poseidon. Also Poseidon has disobeyed him. He sees Poseidon down there helping the Greeks. He saw Hector lying in the plain. Remember, back in Book 14, line 439, Telamonian Aias had wounded Hector with a giant rock, and Hector was vomiting blood, and he was terribly wounded. So Zeus sees him. He saw Hector lying in the plain, his companions sitting around him, he dazed at the heart and breathing painfully, line 10, vomiting blood, since not the weakest Achaean had hit him. It was Telamonian Aias. Then the father of gods and men, seeing Hector, pitied him and looked scowling terribly at Hera and spoke a word to her. Hopeless one, it was your evil design, your treachery, Hera, that stayed brilliant Hector from battle, terrified his people, line 15. I do not know, perhaps for this contrivance of evil and pain, you will win first reward when I lash you with whip strokes. So he's deciding how he will punish her. Do you not remember that time you hung from high, and on your feet I slung two anvils, and about your hands drove a golden chain, unbreakable? You among the clouds and the bright sky hung, nor could the gods about tall Olympus endure it, and stood about, but could not set you free. If I caught one, I would seize and throw him from the threshold, caught a god trying to save her, until he landed stunned on the earth. Yet even so, the weariless agony for Heracles the godlike would not let go my spirit. You, with the north wind's aid, winning over the storm winds, drove him on across the desolate sea in evil intention, and then on these swept him away to cause the strong founded. Homer here is telling us a very unusual story. We don't have other sources to tell us what was going on here about Hera and hanging from her feet, slung by two anvils, and the golden chain. These are unusual, and scholars argue over this. It's quite interesting. These anvils end up taking 9 days to fall to earth. We get this other information from Hesiod's Theogony. Remember, Theogony tells about the origins of the gods, and this is from section 722. Very interesting. Line 29. I myself rescued him there and brought him back once more to horse pasturing Argos, Greece, when he had been through much hardship. I will remind you of all this, so you will give up your deceptions. See if your lovemaking in bed will help you. That way you lay with me apart from the gods and deceived me. He spoke, and the lady, the ox-eyed goddess Hera, was frightened, and she spoke to him and addressed him in winged words. Now let earth be my witness in this, and the wide heaven above us, and the dripping water of the Styx. Remember, that's the biggest, big oath. Which oath is the biggest and most formidable oath among the blessed immortals? The sanctity of your head be witness, and the bed of marriage between us, because they're married, a thing by which I at least, could never swear vainly. So she will not swear vainly by their marriage bed, because she doesn't cheat on Zeus, but he does on her. It's a slam to her husband Zeus. Line 41. It is not through my will that the shaker of the earth Poseidon afflicts the Trojans and Hector and gives aids to the others, but it's his own passion that urges him to it and drives him. So Hera lies through her teeth here, out of fear of her husband Zeus, and says, I didn't put Poseidon up to this. Line 44. He saw the Achaeans hard-pressed beside their ships and pitied them. No, but I myself also would give him counsel to go with you, O dark-clouded, that way that you lead us. And so here Lines 45 and 46, Harris says, "Oh, no, if he asked me what should be done, I would always tell him, do whatever Zeus would do." She spoke, and now the father of gods and men smiled on her, and spoke again in answer to her, and addressed her in winged words. "If even you, Lady Hera of the Ox-Eyes, hereafter, were to take your place among the immortals, thinking as I do, then Poseidon, hard though he may wish it otherwise, must at once turn his mind so it follows your heart and my heart." So he believes her. "If now all this that you say is real, and you speak truthfully, go now among the generations of the gods, and summon Iris to come here to me, and Apollo, the glorious archer, so that Iris may go among the bronze-armored people of the Achaeans, the Greeks, and give a message to Lord Poseidon to leave the fighting, and come back to the home that is his. Also, let Phoebus Apollo stir Hector back into battle." Line 60. "Breathe strength in him once more, and make him forget the agonies that now are wearing out his senses. Let him drive strengthless panic into the Achaeans, into the Greeks, and turn them back once more. Let them be driven in flight, and tumble back on the benched ships of Achilles, Peleus' son. And he shall rouse up Patroclus, his companion." And now Zeus is telling us what is going to happen in line 65. "And glorious Hector shall cut down Patroclus with the spear before Ilion, Troy, after he has killed many others of the young men, and among them my own son, shining Sarpedon. In anger for him, brilliant Achilles shall then kill Hector, and from then on I would make the fighting surge back from the vessels, always and continuously, until the Achaeans, the Greeks, capture headlong Ilion, Troy, through the designs of Athena." The designs of Athena. How will they capture Troy? Through the designs of Athena. And this, of course, Athena is the patron goddess of Odysseus. There's a little hint of this, because this will include the Trojan horse. "Before this I am not stopping my anger, and I will not let any others of the immortals stand there by the Danaans, the Greeks, until the thing asked by the son of Peleus has been accomplished." So Zeus will not allow anything to happen. No god can interfere until the Trojans set fire to the Greek ships. This is what Zeus promised Thetis for Achilles' honor, remember? "Until the thing asked by the son of Peleus has been accomplished," line 74 again, "as I undertook at the first and bent my head in assent to it on that day when embracing my knees, immortal Thetis supplicated honor for Achilles, sacker of cities." He spoke, and the goddess of the white arms Hera did not disobey him, but went back to tall Olympus from the mountains of Ida. As the thought flashes in the mind of a mind, and this is a simile, who traversing much territory thinks of things in the mind's awareness, "I wish I were this place or this," and imagines many things, so rapidly in her eagerness, winged Hera, a goddess. She came to sheer Olympus, and entered among the assembled immortal gods in the house of Zeus. And they, seeing her, rose all to swarm about her, and lifted their cups in greeting, because she's the queen, so they won't sit in her presence. But Hera passed by the others, and accepted a cup from Themis of the fair cheeks, since she had first come running to greet her, and had spoken to her, and addressed her in winged words. "Hera, why have you come? You seem like one who has been terrified." Line 90. "I know it was the son of Cronos, your husband, frightened you." In turn, the goddess Hera of the White Arms answered her, "Ask me nothing of this, divine Themis. You yourself know what his spirit is, how it is stubborn and arrogant. Preside still over the gods in their house, the feast's fair division," line 95. "Yet so much may you hear, and with you all the immortals, how Zeus discloses evil actions, and I do not think the heart of all will be pleasured alike, neither among mortals nor gods either, although one now still feasts at his pleasure." Line 100. The lady Hera spoke so, and sat down, and the gods about the house of Zeus were troubled. Hera was smiling with her lips, but above the dark brows her forehead was not at peace. She spoke before them all in vexation. "Fools, we who try to work against Zeus thoughtlessly, still we are thinking in our anger to go near and stop him by argument or force. He sits apart and cares nothing, nor thinks of us, and says that among the other immortals, he is preeminently the greatest in power and strength." So she's pouting here. "He thinks he's the best. Therefore, each of you must take whatever evil he sends you." So Hera here is causing trouble. She's reminding all of them that Zeus claims to be the head of all the gods, and she's whining, complaining about it. She's trying to cause some dissent. And she'll let slip something here in front of Ares, god of war, about his son being dead. And Ares doesn't even know it until Hera says this. And she knows it. Line 110. Since I think already a sorrow has been wrought against Ares, his son has been killed in the fighting, dearest of all men to him, Ascalaphus, whom stark Ares calls his own son. So she spoke. Then Ares struck against both his big thighs with the flaps of his hands, and spoke a word of anger and sorrow. Line 115. Now, you who have your homes on Olympus, you must not blame me for going among the ships of the Achaeans and avenging my son's slaughter, even though it be my fate to be struck by Zeus's thunderbolt and sprawled in the blood and dust by the dead men. So he spoke and ordered fear and terror to harness his horses and got himself into his shining armor. Fear and terror are his, one is Phoebus, are his assistants. And there might have been wrought another anger and bitterness from Zeus still greater, more wearisome among the immortals, had not Athena, in her fear for the sake of all gods, sprung up and out through the forecourt, left her chair where she was sitting, line 125, and taken the helmet off his head, the shield from his shoulders, and snatched out of his heavy hand the bronze spear, and fixed it apart, so she sticks it in the ground, and then in speech reasoned with violent Ares. So Athena's trying to reason with Ares. Line 128. Madman! Mazed of your wits, this is ruin. Your ears can listen still to reality, but your mind is gone and your discipline. Do you not hear what the goddess Hera of the White Arms tells us? And she, coming back even now from Zeus of Olympus, do you wish, after running the course of many misfortunes yourself, still to come back to Olympus under compulsion, though reluctant, and plant seed of great sorrow among the rest of us? Line 135. Since he will at once leave the Achaeans and the high-hearted Trojans and come back to batter us on Olympus, and will catch up as they come, the guilty one and the guiltless. Therefore I ask of you to give up your anger for your son. But now some other, better of his strength and hands than your son was, has been killed, or will soon be killed, and it is a hard thing to rescue all the generation and seed of all mortals. Okay, there's so many of them. So she spoke, and seated on a chair, violent Ares. But Hera called to come with her outside the house, Apollo and Iris. So Hera says, come out here, Apollo and Iris, who is messenger among the immortal gods, and spoke to them and addressed them in winged words. Zeus wishes, line 145, Zeus wishes both of you to go to him with all speed at Ida. But when you've come there and looked upon Zeus's countenance, then you must do whatever he urges you and his orders. So the lady Hera spoke, and once more returning sat on her throne. They, in a flash of speed, winged their way onward. They came to Ida with all her springs, the mother of wild beasts, and found the wide-browed son of Cronos in the height of Gargaron, sitting still, and fragrant cloud gathered in a circle about him. These two came into the presence of Zeus the cloud-gatherer and stood, nor was his heart angry when he looked upon them, line 155, seeing they had promptly obeyed the message of his dear lady. He spoke to Iris first of the two and addressed her in winged words. So this is Zeus speaking to Iris, and he's going to give her a message to give to Poseidon. Go on your way now, swift Iris, to the Lord Poseidon, and give him all this message, nor be a false messenger. Tell him that he must now quit the war and the fighting and go back among the generations of gods or into the bright sea. And if he will not obey my words or thinks nothing of them, then let him consider in his heart and his spirit that he might not, strong though he is, be able to stand up to my attack, since I say I am far greater than he is in strength, and elder-born. Yet his inward heart shrinks not from calling himself the equal of me, though others shudder before me. And so Zeus is letting the audience know that Poseidon thinks he is the equal of Zeus, and Zeus says he's not. He spoke, and swift wind-footed Iris did not disobey him, but went down along the hills of Ida to sacred Ilion, Troy. And what was it like? As those times, when out of the clouds the snow or the hail whirls cold beneath the blast of the north wind borne in the bright air, so rapidly in her eagerness winged Iris, the swift one, and stood beside the famed shaker of the earth and spoke to him. So Iris is speaking to Poseidon. She went down to the battle to give him Zeus's message. I have a certain message for you, dark-haired earth-encircler, and came here to bring it to you from Zeus of the Aegis. His order is that you quit the war and the fighting and go back among the generations of gods or into the bright sea. And if you will not obey his words or think nothing of them, his threat is that he himself will come to fight with you here, strength against strength, but warns you to keep from under his hands, since he says he is far greater than you are in strength and elder-born. Yet your inward heart shrinks not from calling yourself the equal of him, though others shudder before him. That was line 183. And of course, the parents of Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades, these three brothers, the parents were Rhea and Kronos. Rhea and Kronos were the parents of Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. Line 184. Then, deeply vexed, the famed shaker of the earth spoke to her. This is Poseidon replying to Iris. No, no, great though he is, this that he has said is too much. If he will force me against my will, me, who am his equal in rank, since we are three brothers born to Rhea to Cronus, born by Rhea to Cronus, Zeus and I, and the third is Hades, lord of the dead men. All was divided among us three ways, each given his domain. I, when the lots were shaken, drew the gray sea to live in forever. So now we know that these three gods drew lots to see who would have which part of the world would be their domain. I, when the lots were shaken, drew the gray sea to live in forever. Hades drew the lot of the mists and the darkness, and Zeus was allotted the wide sky, in the cloud, and the bright air. But Earth and high Olympus are common to all three. Therefore I am no part of the mind of Zeus. Let him in tranquility and powerful as he is stay satisfied with his third share, and let him absolutely stop frightening me, as if I were mean, common, with his hands. It were better to keep for the sons and the daughters he got himself these blusterings and these threats of terrors. All right, so now Poseidon here is threatening all the mortals that are the children of Zeus. It were better to keep for the sons and the daughters he got himself these blusterings and these threats of terror. They will listen because they must to whatever he tells them. Line 200. Then in turn, swift-footed Iris answered him, Am I then to carry, O dark-haired earth encircler, this word, which is strong and steep, back to Zeus from you? Or will you change a little? The hearts of the great can be changed. You know the Furies, how they forever side with the elder. You can take a look at Book 9, line 454. 9, 454. Check this out. Then in turn the shaker of the earth Poseidon spoke to her, line 205, Now this, divine Iris, was a word quite properly spoken. It is a fine thing when a messenger is conscious of justice, but this thing comes as a bitter sorrow to my heart and my spirit, when Zeus tries in words of anger to reprimand one who is his equal in station and endowed with destiny like his. Still, this time I will give way for all my vexation, but I will say this also and make it a threat in my anger. If ever, acting apart from me and Athena the spoiler, apart from Hera and Hermes and the Lord Hephaestus, he shall spare headlong Ilion Troy, and shall not be willing to take it by storm, and bestow great victory on the Argives, the Greeks, let him be sure there will be no more healing of our anger. So, yes, he will relent on this occasion. However, if Zeus decides to spare Troy, then they will never be able to be friends again. Their anger will not be able to be healed. The shaker of the earth spoke and left the Achaean, the Greek people, and went merging in the sea. So Poseidon leaves the battle, and the fighting Achaeans longed for him. After this, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, spoke to Apollo, line 220, Go now, beloved Phoebus, to the side of brazen helmed Hector, since by this he who encircles the earth and shakes it is gone into the bright sea, and has avoided the anger that would be ours. In truth, this would have been a fight those other gods would have heard about, who gathered to Cronos beneath us, line 225. Now this way it was far better for me, and for himself also, that, for all his vexation before, he gave way to my hands. We would have sweated before this business was finished. Now, take up in your hands the aegis with fluttering tassels, and shake it hard to scare the Greek fighters, the Achaean fighters, line 320. So Zeus is now giving Apollo permission to take the aegis and shake it around to scare the Greeks. Then, striker from afar, let your own concern be glorious Hector. So long waken the huge strength in him, until the Achaeans run in flight and come to the ships and the crossing of Hel. That's the Hellespont. From there on, I myself shall think of the word and the action to make the Achaeans get wind once more after their hard fighting. 235. He spoke so, and Apollo, not disregarding his father, came down along the mountains of Ida in the likeness of a rapid hawk, the dove's murderer, and swiftest of all things flying. He found brilliant Hector, the son of wise Priam, sitting now, no longer sprawled, as he gathered new strength back into him, line 240, and recognized his companions about him, so Hector is now coming too. The sweat and hard breathing had begun to stop, once the will in Zeus of the Aegis wakened him. Apollo, who works from afar, stood beside him and spoke to him. Hector, son of Priam, why do you sit in such weakness here, apart from the others? Did some disaster befall you? Line 245. In his weakness, Hector of the Shining Helm spoke to him. Who are you who speak to me face to face, O noblest of gods? Did you not know how by the Achaeans' grounded ships, Aias of the great war cry struck me in the chest with a boulder as I slaughtered his companions and stayed my furious valor? Okay, he stopped my furious valor. Truly, I thought that on this day I would come to the corpses in the house of the death god once I had breathed the inward life from me. Okay, Hector said, I thought I was going to die. In turn, the Lord, the worker from afar, Apollo, spoke to him. Take heart. Such an avenger am I, whom the son of Cronos sent down from Ida, to stand by your side and defend you, Phoebus Apollo of the Golden Sword, who in time before this also have stood to defend yourself and your sheer citadel. So come now, and urge on your cavalry in their numbers to drive on their horses against the hollow ships. Line 260. Meanwhile, I shall move on before you and make all the way for the horses smooth before them, and bend back the Achaean Greek fighters. He spoke and breathed huge strength into the shepherd of the people. And what was it like when Apollo breathed huge strength into Hector, the shepherd of the Trojan people? As when some stalled horse, who has been corn-fed at the manger, breaking free of his rope, gallops over the plain in thunder to his accustomed bathing place in a sweet-running river, and in the pride of his strength holds high his head and the mane floats over his shoulders, sure of his glorious strength, the quick knees carry him to the loved place and the pasture of horses. Okay, just like when a horse goes for its favorite watering hole. So Hector, line 269, moving rapidly, his feet and his knees went onward, stirring the horsemen when he heard the god's voice speak. And what was it like? As when men who live in the wilds and their dogs have driven into flight a horned stag or a wild goat, inaccessible the rocky cliff or the shadowed forest has covered the quarry, so that men know it was not for their fortune to take him. Okay, just like when they chase an animal, just like when hunters chase an animal, but they know that because of the place the animal runs into, they'll never get him. Line 275. And now by their clamoring shows in the way a great bearded lion and bends them to sudden flight for all their eagerness. Okay, they're chasing after the animal, but then they run into a lion. So the Danaans, the Greeks, until that time kept always in close chase assembled, stabbing at them with swords and leaf-headed spears. But when they saw Hector once more ranging the men's ranks, they were frightened, and by their feet collapsed all their bravery. Okay, their bravery just fell around their feet. Now Thoas spoke forth among them, the son of Andraemon, far the best of the Aetolians, one skilled in the spear's throw and brave in close fight. In assembly, few of the Achaeans, when the young men contended in debate, could outdo him. Line 285. He, in kind intention now, spoke and addressed them. Can this be? Here is a strange thing I see with my own eyes, how this Hector has got to his feet once more, and eluded the death spirits. I think in each of us the heart had high hope he was killed under the hands of Telamonian Aias. Now someone of the gods has come to his help and rescued Hector, who has unstrung the knees of so many Danaans. I think he will do it once more now. It is not without Zeus, the deep thundering, that he stands their champion in all this fury. Come then, let us do as I say. Let us all be persuaded. Let us tell the multitude to make its way back toward the vessels, line 295, while we ourselves, who claim we are greatest in all the army, stand and see if we can face him first and hold him off from them with spears lifted against him. And I think, for all of his fury, his heart will be afraid to plunge into our Danaan company. So he spoke, line 300, and they listened to him with care and obeyed him. They who rallied about Aias, the lord Idomeneus, Teucrus, Meriones, and Meges, a man like the war god, like a man like Ares, closed their order for hard impact, calling on the bravest to face Hector and the Trojans. Meanwhile, behind them, the multitude made their way back toward the ships of the Achaeans. Line 305. The Trojans came down on them in a pack, and Hector led them in long strides, and in front of him went Phoebus Apollo. So Phoebus Apollo is going with the Aegis, and he's going in front of Hector. So if the Greeks are terrified, if the Greeks run away, if the Greeks go toward their ship, Homer's audience does not have to be shamed that their Greek warriors are running from Trojans, because who are they really running from? A god himself who also has the Aegis shaking it around in front of Hector. And in front of him went Phoebus Apollo, wearing a mist about his shoulders, and held the tempestuous, terrible Aegis, shaggy, conspicuous, that the bronze smith Hephaestus had given Zeus to wear to the terror of mortals. Line 310. Gripping this in both hands, he led on the Trojan people. This is Apollo. But the Argives stood in close order against them, and the battle cry rose up in a thin scream from either side, the arrows from the bowstrings jumping, while from violent hands the numerous thrown spears were driven, some deep in the bodies of quick-stirring young men, 315, while many in the space between, before they had got to the white skin, stood fast in the ground, though they had been straining to reach the bodies. So long as Phoebus Apollo held stilled in his hands the Aegis, so long the thrown weapons of both took hold, and men dropped under them. But when he stared straight into the eyes of the fast-mounted Danaans and shook the Aegis, and himself gave a great banging cry, but when Apollo himself made the battle cry, the spirit inside them, the Greeks, was mazed to hear it, and they forgot their furious valor. And they, what was it like? As when in the dim of the black night, two wild beasts stampede a herd of cattle, or big flock of sheep falling suddenly upon them when no herdsman is by, the Achaeans, the Greeks, fled so in their weakness and terror, since Apollo drove terror upon them and gave the glory, the kleos, to the Trojans and Hector. And now Homer's audience, the Greeks, do not need to lose face or be shamed, because it is Apollo chasing them. Line 328. There man killed man all along the scattered encounter. Hector first killed Stichius, and Archesilaus, one the leader of the bronze-armored Boeotians, the other trusted companion in arms of great-hearted Menestheus. But Aeneas slaughtered Medon and Iasus. Of these, Medon was the illegitimate son of godlike Oileus, and therefore the brother of Aias, Telamonian Aias, but had made his home in Phylace, away from the land of his fathers, having killed a man, a relation, in Eurypius, his stepmother, the wife of Oileus. This is a very interesting. This is an instance where a man had to go off and go to a safe place. We have instances of this in the Old Testament of safe cities. If he killed someone, and rather than continue with the feud, he had to leave. Iasus was a leader appointed of the Athenians, and was called the son of Sphesilus, the son of Bucolus. Polydamas killed Mecisteus, and Polites Ichius on the first onfall, and brilliant Agenor cut down Clonius. Paris, Alexander, struck Diacus from behind at the shoulder's base as he ran away through the front ranks and drove the bronze clean through. While these stripped the armor from their men, meanwhile the Achaeans, the Greeks, blundering about the deep-dug ditch and the sharp stakes, ran this way and that in terror, forced into their rampart. Line 345. But Hector called aloud in a piercing cry to the Trojans, "Make hard for the ships! Let the bloody spoils be! Leave all the treasure, leave all the spoils alone. That man I see in the other direction apart from the vessels, whoever I see who's not heading toward the ships, I will take care that he gets his death, and that man's relations, neither men nor women, shall give his dead body the right of burning." So Hector says, forget the spoils, forget the shields and all the good stuff, get to the ships. He wants to set those on fire. And if he sees anybody trying to strip the bodies, anybody who's not just trying to get to the ships, he's going to make sure that that man dies and that his family will not be able to burn the body in a proper rite. And line 351, in the space before our city, the dogs shall tear him to pieces. So anybody who is not going for the ships, Hector tells all the Trojans that their body will be left out to be eaten by dogs. So speaking, with a whip stroke from the shoulder, he lashed on his horses, calling across the ranks to the Trojans, who along with him all cried aloud as they steered the horses, who pulled their chariots with inhuman clamor. And in front of them, Phoebus Apollo, easily kicking them with his feet, tumbled the banked edges of the deep ditch into the pit between, and bridged over a pathway both wide and long, about as long as the force of a spear cast goes when a man has thrown it to try his strength. Now, who knocked over the Greeks' wall? Not the Trojans. Now, for Homer's audience, this is very important. Homer's sympathies will always be with the Greeks. A god, Apollo, kicked over their wall. They streamed over in massed formation, with Apollo in front of them, holding, line 360, the tremendous Aegis, and wrecked the bastions of the Achaeans easily. What was it like? As when a little boy piles sand by the seashore, when in his innocent play he makes sand towers to amuse him, and then, still playing, with hands and feet ruins them and wrecks them? So you, Lord Apollo, piled in confusion much hard work and painful done by the Argives, and drove terror among them. It was just like that, just like when a little boy builds a sandcastle and then knocks it over. That's how Apollo knocked over their wall, like it was nothing but a sandcastle. So they reined in and stood fast again beside their ships, calling aloud upon each other and to all of the gods, uplifting their hands. Each man of them cried out his prayers in a great voice, and beyond others, Geranian Nestor, the Achaeans' watcher, because Nestor is too old to go out to battle, so he's the Greeks' watcher, he watches the battle, line 370, prayed, reaching out both arms to the starry heavens. So this is Nestor praying. Father Zeus, if ever in wheat-deep Argus, Greece, one of us, burning before you the rich thigh pieces of sheep or ox, prayed he would come home again, and you nodded your head and assented, remember this, Olympian, save us from the day without pity. Let not the Achaeans, the Greeks, be beaten down like this by the Trojans. So he spoke in prayer, and Zeus of the councils thundered a great stroke, hearing the prayer of the old man, the son of Neleus. But the Trojans, hearing the thunderstroke of Zeus of the Aegis, remembered even more their warcraft and sprang on the Argive Greeks. Line 380. They, what was it like? As when the big waves on the sea, wide wandering, wash across the walls of a ship, underneath the leaning force of the wind, which particularly piles up the big waves, so the Trojans, with huge clamor, went over the rampart and drove their forces to fight alongside the grounded vessels. With leaf-headed spears, some at close quarters, others from their horses, that the Achaeans, climbing high on their black ships, fought from them with long pikes that lay among the hulls for sea-fighting, shrouded about the heads in bronze that was soldered upon them. Meanwhile, Patroclus, all the time the Achaeans and Trojans were fighting on both sides of the wall, far away from fast ships, that's 391, had sat all this time in the shelter of courtly Eurypylus, and had been entertaining him with words and applying medicines that would mitigate the black pains to the sore wound. Line 395. But when he saw the Trojans were sweeping over the rampart, and the outcry and the noise of terror rose from the Danaans, Patroclus groaned aloud then and struck himself on both thighs with the flats of his hands and spoke a word of lamentation. Eurypylus, much though you need me, I cannot stay here longer with you. This is a big fight that has arisen. Now it is time for your henchmen to look after you while I go in haste to Achilles to stir him into the fighting. Who knows if, with God helping, I might trouble his spirit by entreaty, since the persuasion of a friend is a strong thing. Line 405. As he was speaking, his feet carried him away. Meanwhile, the Achaeans stood steady against the Trojan attack, but they could not beat the enemy, fewer as they were, away from their vessels. Nor again had the Trojans strength to break the battalions of the Danaans, the Greeks, and force their way into the ships and shelters. But what was it like? As a chalk line straightens the cutting of a ship's timber in the hands of an expert carpenter, who by Athenius' inspiration is well versed in all his craft's subtlety, so the battles fought by both sides were pulled fast and even. Now, by the ships, others fought in their various places, but Hector made straight for glorious Aias, Telamonian Aias. These two were fighting hard for a single ship, and neither was able, Hector to drive Aias off the ship and set fire to it, nor Aias to beat Hector back, since the divinity drove him. Shining Aias struck with the spear, Calator, and Calator is Priam's nephew. This is Hector's cousin, Clytius' son, Calator. Shining Aias struck with the spear, Calator, this is Clytius' son and Priam's nephew and Hector's cousin, Clytius' son, in the chest as he brought fire to the vessel. He fell thunderously, and the torch dropped from his hand. Then Hector, when his eyes were aware of his cousin, fallen in the dust in front of the black ship, uplifting his voice in a great cry, called to the Trojans and Lycians, line 4-5, Trojans, Lycians, Dardanians. So you see, the Danans are the Greeks, Dardanians are Trojans. Dardanians, who fight at close quarters, do not anywhere in this narrow place give way from the fighting, but stand by the son of Clytius. Do not let the Achaeans, the Greeks, strip the armor from him, fallen where the ships are assembled. So he spoke, and made a cast at Aias with the shining spear, but missed him, and struck the son of Mastor, Lycophron, henchman of Aias from Cythera, who had been living with him, for he had killed a man in sacred Cythera. And so here's another man who had killed a man at Cythera, his home, and had to go off and live somewhere else, and he's been living with Aias. Hector struck him in the head above the ear with the sharp bronze as he stood next to Aias, so that Lycophron, sprawling, dropped from the ship's stern to the ground, and his strength was broken. Line 4-5. And Aias shuddered at the sight and spoke to his brother, "See, dear Teucrus, our true companion, the son of Mastor, is killed, who came to us from Cythera, and in our own household was one we honored as we honored our beloved parents. Now great-hearted Hector has killed him. Where are your arrows of sudden death and the bow that Phoebus Apollo gave you?" He spoke, and Teucrus heard and came running to stand beside him, holding in his hand the back-strung bow and the quiver to hold arrows, to let go his hard shots against the Trojans. First he struck down Cletus, the glorious son of Pisenor and companion of Polydamas, proud son of Panthous. Now Cletus held the reins and gave all his care to the horses, driving them into that place where the most battalions were shaken, for the favor of Hector and the Trojans, but the sudden evil came to him, and none for all their desire could defend him. Line 450. For the painful arrow was driven into his neck from behind him. He fell out of the chariot, and the fast-footed horses shied away, rattling the empty car. But Polydamas, their master, saw it at once, and ran first to the heads of the horses. He gave them into the hands of Astyanus, Protean's son, with many orders to be watchful and hold the horses close, then himself went back into the ranks of the champions. But Teucrus picked up another arrow for bronze-helmed Hector, and would have stopped his fighting by the ships of the Achaeans had he hit him during his bravery and torn the life from him, line 460. But he was not hidden from the close purpose of Zeus, who was guarding Hector, and denied that glory to Telamonian Teucrus, who broke in the unfaulted bow the close twisted sinew as Teucrus drew it against him. So the bronze-weighted arrow went, as the bow dropped out of his hands, driven crazily sidewise. And Teucrus shuddered at the sight and spoke to his brother, "See now how hard the divinity cuts across the intention in all our battle, who struck the bow out of my hand. So if your bow breaks, if the string breaks, you blame the god, who struck the bow out of my hand, who has broken the fresh twisted sinew of the bowstring I bound on just this morning, line 470, so it would stand the succession of springing arrows." Then in turn, huge Telamonian Aias answered him, "Dear brother, then let your bow and your showering arrows lie, now that the god, begrudging the Danans, the Greeks, wrecked them. But take a long spear in your hands, a shield on your shoulder, and close with the Trojans, and drive on the rest of your people. Let them not, though they have beaten us, easily capture our strong benched ships. We must remember the frenzy of fighting." He spoke, and Teucrus put away the bow in his shelter, and threw across his shoulder the shield of the fourfold oxhide. Line 480. Over his mighty head he set the well-fashioned helmet, with the horsehair crest, and the plumes nodded terribly above it. Then he caught up a powerful spear, edged with sharp bronze, and went on his way, running fast, and stood beside Aias. But Hector, when he saw how the arrows of Teucrus were baffled, lifted his voice in a great cry to the Trojans and Lycians. "Trojans, Lycians, Dardanians, who fight at close quarters, be men now, dear friends. Remember your furious valor among the hollow ships, since I've seen with my own eyes how by the hand of Zeus their bravest man's arrows were baffled. Easily seen is the strength that is given from Zeus to mortals, either in those into whose hands he gives the surpassing glory, or those he diminishes and will not defend them as now. He diminishes the strength of the Argives, Greeks, and helps us. Fight on, then, by the ships together. He who among you finds by spear thrown or spear thrust his death and destiny, let him die. He has no dishonor when he dies defending his country, for then his wife shall be saved, and his children afterwards, and his house and property shall not be damaged, if the Achaeans must go away with their ships to the beloved land of their fathers. So here Hector is telling the Trojans, don't be afraid if you die battling the Greeks, because if we drive them off, if they go home, somebody will take care of your wife and children. Line 500. So he spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man. But Aias, on the other side, so now we're back to the Greeks, called to his companions, shame, you Argives. Here is the time of decision, whether we die or live on still and beat back ruin from our vessels. Do you expect, if our ships fall to helm-shining Hector, you will walk each one of you back dry-shod to the land of your fathers? Do you think if Hector burns our ships, you're going to walk home? Do you not hear how Hector is stirring up all his people, how he's raging to set fire to our ships? He's not inviting you to come to a dance. He invites you to battle. For us, there can be no design, no purpose better than this one, to close in and fight with the strength of our hands at close quarters. Line 510. Better to take in a single time our chances of dying or living than to go on being squeezed in the stark encounter, right up against our ships as now, by men worse than we are. Okay, it's better to die fighting for our ships than to get squeezed back further and further by men who aren't as good as they are. So he spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man and each Greek. There Hector killed the son of Perimedes, Schedius, lord of the men of Phocis, but Aias killed Laodamas, leader of the foot soldiers and shining son of Antenor. Then Polydamas stripped Otus of Cyllene, companion to Meges, Phileus' son, and a lord among the great-hearted Epeans. Meges, seeing it, lunged at him, but Polydamas, line 520, bent down and away so that Meges missed him. Apollo would not let Panthous's son go down among the front fighters, but Meges stabbed with the spear the middle of the chest of Chrysmus. He fell thunderously, and Meges was stripping the armor from his shoulders. But meanwhile, Dolops lunged at him. Elampus's son, a man crafty with the spear and strongest of the sons born to Lampus, Laomedon's son, one skilled in furious fighting. He from close up, stabbed with his spear at the shield of Phylides in the middle, but the corslet he wore defended him. What kind of a corslet was it? Line 529. Solid and built with curving plates of metal, which in days past Phileus had taken home from Ephyra and the river Silius. A guest and friend had given it to him, lord of men, Euphetes, to carry into the fighting and beat off the attack of the enemy. And now it guarded the body of his son from destruction. So here we have a corslet, line 529, that is made of solid curving plates of metal, and we got a little bit of the heritage, I can't remember the word, got a little bit of the heritage of this curving plated corslet, and it was a guest friend gift. This is another practice of Xenia. He had given it, and his son brought it. It was to guard the body of his son, and it did its job. Line 535. But Meges stabbed with the sharp spear at the uttermost summit of the brazen helmet thick with horsehair, and tore off the mane of horsehair from the helmet, so that it toppled groundward and lay in the dust in all its new shining of purple. Pedigree of a corslet, that's the word I was looking for, excuse me. Yet Dolops stood his ground and fought on in hope still of winning. But meanwhile, warlike Menelaus came to stand beside Meges, line 540, and came from the side and unobserved with his spear, and from behind threw at his shoulder. So the spear tore through his chest in its fury to drive on, so that Dolops reeled and went down face forward. The two of them swept in to strip away from his shoulders the bronze armor. But Hector called aloud to his brothers, the whole lot, but first scolded the son of Hicteon, strong Menapetes. He, in Percote, had tended his lumbering cattle in the days before when the enemy were still far off. But when the oar-swept ships of the Danans, the Greeks, came, then he returned to Ilion Troy and was a great man among the Trojans, and lived with Priam, who honored him as he honored his children. So this man took care of his cattle until the time the Greeks came to attack Troy, and now he's been staying with Priam since then and and fighting as a soldier. Now Hector spoke a word and called him by name and scolded him. Shall we give way so, Melanippus? Does it mean nothing even to you in the inward heart that your cousin is fallen? Line 555. Do you not see how they're busied over the armor of Dolops? Come on, then. No longer can we stand far off and fight with the Argives, the Greeks. Sooner we must kill them, or else cheerily on Troy, be stuttered utterly before them, be stormed utterly by them, and her citizens be killed. He spoke and led the way, and the other followed, a mortal godlike. Line 560. But huge Telamonianus stirred on the Argives. Dear friends, beam in. Let shame be in your hearts and discipline, and have consideration for each other in the strong encounters, since more come through alive when men consider each other, and there is no glory, no chaos when they give way, nor warcraft either. 9565. He spoke, and they likewise grew furious in their defense, and put his word away in their hearts, and fenced in their vessels in a circle of bronze. But Zeus against them wakened the Trojans. Then Menelaus of the great war cry stirred on Antilochus. Antilochus, no other Achaean is younger than you are, nor faster on his feet, nor strong as you are in fighting. You could make an outrush and strike down some man of the Trojans. So speaking, he hastened back, but stirred Antilochus onward, and he sprang forth from the champions and hefted the shining javelin, glaring round about him, and the Trojans gave way in the face of the man throwing with the spear. And he made no vain cast, but struck Hicetaon's son, Melanippus the high-hearted, in the chest next to the nipple as he swept into the fighting. He fell thunderously, and darkness closed over both eyes. Antilochus sprang forth against him as a hound rushes against a stricken fawn that, as he broke from his covert, a hunter has shot out and hit. What was it like? That's what it was like. And broken his limb strength. So Antilochus, stubborn in battle, sprang. Melanippus at you to strip your armor, but did not escape brilliant Hector's notice, who came on the run through the fighting against him. Antilochus did not hold his ground, although a swift fighter, but fled away like a wild beast who has done some bad thing, one who's killed a hound or an ox herd tending his cattle and escapes before a gang of men has assembled against him. So Nestor's son ran away, and after him the Trojans and Hector, with unearthly clamor, showered their groaning weapons against him. Line 590. He turned and stood when he got into the swarm of his own companions, but the Trojans, in the likeness of ravening lions, swept on against the ships, and were bringing to accomplishment Zeus's orders, who wakened always the huge strength in them, dazed the courage of the Argives, the Greeks, and denied their glory, their chaos, and stirred on the others. Line 595. Zeus's desire was to give glory to the son of Priam, Hector, that he might throw on the curved ships the inhuman weariness strength of fire, and so completely accomplish the prayer of Thetis. Therefore Zeus of the councils waited the sight before his eyes of the flare when a single ship burned. If we look back at Book 1, line 419 to 427, and 1, line 493 to 523, we see this promise of Zeus to Thetis. And we realize that Hector is just a pawn for Zeus. Of course, he's giving the Trojans glory only to accomplish his own, Zeus's purpose. 601. From there on, he would make the attack of the Trojans surge back again from the ships and give the Danaans glory. With this in mind, okay, so he's only using Hector. He's allowing the Trojans to get closer and closer, but his purpose from there on, line 601, he would make the attack of the Trojans surge back again from the ships and give the Danaans, the Greeks, glory. With this in mind, he drove on against the hollow ships, Hector, Priam's son, though Hector, without the god, was in fury enraged, and when destructive fire or spear-shaking Ares, as when destructive fire or spear-shaking Ares rages among the mountains and dense places of the deep forest, a slaver came out around his mouth, he's drooling, and under the lowering brows his eyes were glittering, the helm on his temples was shaken and thundered horribly to the fighting of Hector. Hector is furious. Line 610. Out of the bright sky Zeus himself was working to help him, and among men so numerous he honored this one man and glorified him, since Hector was to have only a short life, and already the day of his death was being driven upon him by Pallas Athena through the strength of Achilles. And now he was probing the ranks of men and trying to smash them, line 615, and made for where there were most men together and the best armor. So how does Hector decide who'd go attack? He's looking for where the most men are together, so you can kill the most, and he's looking for the most armor, so you can strip armor. But even so he could not break them for all his fury, for they closed into a wall and held him like some towering huge sea cliff that lies close along the gray salt water and stands up against the screaming winds and their sudden directions and against the waves that grow to bigness and burst up against it. All right, the Greeks form a wall. And the metaphor here is it's just like a towering sea cliff and the water just breaks against it and can't do anything to it. That's what the Greeks do, and Hector tries to break against this human wall. So the Danaans, the Greeks, stood steady against the Trojans, nor gave way. But he, lit about with flames on all sides, charged on their numbers and descended upon them, as descends on a fast ship the battering wave storm-bred from beneath the clouds, and the ship goes utterly hidden under the foam, and the dangerous blast of the hurricane thunders against the sail, and the hearts of the seamen are shaken with fear as they're carried only a little way out of death's reach. That's what it was like. So the heart in the breast of each Achaean Greek was troubled. Line 630. Hector came on against them as a murderous lion on cattle. What was it like, Hector? It was just like a murderous lion on cattle, who in the low-lying meadow of a great marsh pasture by hundreds, and among them a herdsman who does not quite know how to fight a wild beast off from killing a horn-curved ox, and keeps pace with the first and the last of the cattle always, but the lion, making his spring at the middle, eats an ox as the rest stampede. So now the Achaeans fled in unearthly terror before Father Zeus and Hector, all but he got one only, Periphetes of Mycenae, that's Mycenae, which is, of course, where Agamemnon's from, beloved son of Copreus, who for the Lord Eurystheus had gone often with messages to powerful Heracles. To him, a meaner father, a more common father, was born a son who was better for all talents, in the speed of his feet and in battle, and for intelligence counted among the first in Mycenae. Thereby now higher was the glory he granted to Hector. For as he whirled about to get back, he fell over the outrim of the shield he carried, which reached to his feet to keep the spears from him. This is a huge Mycenaean body shield that's described here. It goes all the way down to his feet. And did this Greek Mycenaean, was the shield, was he conquered? No, he tripped. Stumbling on this, he went over on his back, and the helmet that circled his temples clashed horribly as he went down. Hector saw it sharply and ran up and stood beside him. Line 650, and struck the spear into his chest and killed him before the eyes of his dear friends, who for all their sorrowing could do nothing to help their companion, being themselves afraid of great Hector. Now they had got among the ships, and the ends were about them of the ships hauled up in the first line, but the Trojans swarmed on them. The Argives, the Greeks, under force, gave back from the first line of their ships, but along the actual shelters they rallied in a group and did not scatter along the encampment. Shame held them and fear. They kept up a continuous call to each other, and beyond others, Dranian Nestor, the Achaeans' watcher, supplicated each man by the knees for the sake of his parents. Dear friends, be men, let shame be in your hearts and discipline in the sight of other men, and each one of you remember his children and his wife, his property and his parents, whether a man's father and mother live or have died. Here now I supplicate your knees for the sake of those who are absent, to stand strongly and not be turned to the terror of panic. And so here Nestor is not supplicating the enemy Trojans, he's actually supplicating his own men, the Greeks, to not give up. So he spoke and stirred the spirit and heart in each man, and from their eyes Athena pushed the darkness immortal of mist, and the light came out hard against them on both sides, whether they looked from the ships or from the closing of battle. Line 670. They knew Hector of the great war cry. They knew his companions, whether they stood away behind and out of the fighting, or whether alongside the fast ships they fought in the battle. Nor did it still please great-hearted Aias, Telamonian Aias, to stand back where the other sons of the Achaeans had taken position. Okay, Telamonian Aias is not happy standing back with all the men, but he can't exactly be the only one to go forward. Line 675. But he went, so what does he do? They're huddling, remember, by their camps, by their encampment. Line 657. But he went in huge strides up and down the decks by the decks of the vessels. He wielded in his hands a great pike for sea fighting, 22 cubits long and joined by clinchers. And as a man who is an expert rider of horses, who, when he has chosen and coupled four horses out of many, makes his way over the plain, galloping toward a great city along the traveled road, and many turn to admire him, men or women, while he steadily and never slipping jumps and shifts his stance from one to the other as they gallop. Here we have a description. What is it like? As the great-hearted Telamonian Aias will not go with the other Greeks and huddle by their encampment, so he's striding up and down the decks of the vessels. He's got a huge, long sea pike, 22 cubits long. And what is it like? This simile just describes something like a circus. Four horses, and the rider jumps, shifts his stance from one to the other as they gallop. Very interesting. This is the picture of Aias. Line 685. So Aias ranged, crossing from deck to deck of the fast ships, taking huge strides. So Aias is actually jumping from ship deck to ship deck, taking huge strides, like a man jumping from one horse to the other. And his voice went always up to the bright sky as he kept up a terrible bellow and urged on the Danaans, the Greeks, to defend their ships and their shelters, while on the other side Hector would not stay back among the mass of close-armored Trojans. But as, what's it like? As a flashing eagle makes his plunge upon another flying bird's, as these feed in a swarm by a river, whether these be geese or cranes or swans long-throated, so Hector steered the course of his outrush straight for a vessel with dark prows, and from behind Zeus was pushing him onward hard with his big hand and stirred on his people beside him. 9695. Now once again a grim battle was fought by the vessels. You would say that they faced each other unbruised, unwearied in the fighting, from the speed in which they went for each other. Okay, by the speed that the Trojan and the Greeks went at each other, you'd think they weren't even tired. This was the thought in each as they struggled on. The Achaeans thought they could not get clear of the evil, but must perish. Line 700. While the heart inside each one of the Trojans was hopeful to set fire to the ships and kill the fighting men of Achaea of Greece. With such thoughts in mind, they stood up to fight with each other. Hector caught hold of the stern of a grand, fast-running, seafaring ship that once had carried Protesilaus to Troy and did not take him back to the land of his fathers. If you compare and look back at Book 2, line 698, and then also look at Book 13, line 681, you see that Protesilaus was the first one to land, and so he's also the closest one here, and so his poor ship will be the first to be set on fire. It was around his ship that now Achaeans and Trojans cut each other down at close quarters, nor any longer had patience for the volleys exchanged from bows and javelins, but stood up close against each other, matching their fury. So they're not just throwing javelins now. They are close together. This is hand-to-hand, you know, face-to-face fighting, line 710. Matching their fury, and fought their battle with sharp hatchets and axes, with great swords and with leaf-headed pikes, and many magnificent swords were scattered along the ground, black-thronged, heavy-hilted, sometimes dropping from the hands, some glancing from shoulders of men as they fought. So the ground ran black with blood. Hector would not let go of the stern of a ship where he had caught hold of it, but gripped the stern-post in his hands and called to the Trojans. So Hector actually has his hands gripping a hold of a Greek ship. So he's pretty excited. Bring fire and give single voice to the clamor of battle. Now Zeus has given us a day worth all the rest of them. But of course, Hector doesn't realize Zeus has given them this day that's worth all the rest of them only to fulfill his promise to Thetis. And as soon as he has fulfilled his promise to Thetis, then of course the Trojans will begin losing again. Line 720. The ship's capture, the ships that came here in spite of the gods' will and have visited much pain upon us by our counselors' cowardice who would not let me fight by the grounded ships, though I wanted to, but held me back in restraint and curbed in our fighters. But Zeus of the wide brows, though then he fouled our intentions, comes now himself to urge us on and give us encouragement. We have another instance of the fact that the humans know the gods are fickle. They can change their minds hour by hour, day by day. 726. He spoke, and they thereby came on harder against the Argives, against the Greeks. Their volleys were too much for Aias, who could hold no longer his place, but had to give back a little, expecting to die there, back to the 7-foot midship, and gave up the high deck of the balanced ship. Line 730. There he stood and waited for them. and with his pike always beat off any Trojan who carried persistent fire from the vessels. We see Telamonian Aias literally working alone. He kept up a terrible bellowing and urged on the Danaans, the Greeks. Friends and fighting men of the Danaans, Greeks, henchmen of Ares. So, you know, you're like the war god. You're his children, his compatriots. Be men now, dear friends. Remember your furious valor. Do we think there are others who stand behind us to help us? Do you think there are people behind us who are going to help us up? No, it's up to us. Line 735. Have we some stronger wall that can rescue men from perdition? We have no city built strong with towers lying near us, within which we could defend ourselves and hold off this host that matches us. We hold position in this plain of the close-armored Trojans, bent back against the sea, and far from the land of our fathers. We're a long way from home. We have to protect these ships. Salvation's light is in our hands' work, not the mercy of battle. He spoke and came forward with his sharp spear, raging for battle. And whenever some Trojan crashed against the hollow ships with burning fire, who sought to wake the favor of Hector, because, of course, any Trojan who could set fire to a ship is really going to win the favor of Hector, isn't he? Aias would wait for him and then stab with the long pike, and so from close up, wounded 12 in front of the vessels. And so ends Book 15.